From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the parking lot of a McDonald's in rural Arizona. As described by the New York Times, here's what's going on. A pre-med junior at the University of New Mexico named Autumn Lee gets in her car and drives 45 minutes to get to the nearest McDonald's, all so she can connect to reliable Wi-Fi. She does this in her car. When her university sent students online during the spring, Lee had problems getting online to do her work. Her small town in eastern Arizona has spotty and restricted internet service, so she found it took 90 minutes just to watch a 20-minute lecture. She started driving 40 miles so she could sit in a parking lot with a better connection. This past weekend, the New York Times editorial board declared, quote, "Doing schoolwork in the parking lot is not a solution. In a pandemic-plagued country, high-speed internet connections are now a civil rights issue," end quote. Canada has pledged to make sure all students can have access to good internet service during remote learning. But in the United States, it's a mess, a massively unequal hodgepodge. As the Times notes, Governor Gavin Newsom of California announced on Friday new rules that would require the vast majority of schools in California to begin the year remotely. And every day, the list of cities and districts is growing. Going online only at the start of the year include Nashville, Houston, Atlanta. Here in the Rochester area, several local districts announced this week that physical distancing guidelines could keep students out of the classroom. There is tremendous uncertainty. So are we seeing a unified push to make the internet more accessible? No, not exactly. Charter Communications has asked federal regulators, for example, for permission to impose data caps on broadband users, which could further limit student access and internet affordability. Now, you might be thinking, wait a second, I've paid overage fees. There are caps on my plan. But Charter, unlike other companies, isn't allowed to impose data caps because of conditions applied to its merger with Time Warner Cable. So now they want the government to say that they, too, can impose limits, impose a cap, even during a pandemic, and even though they agreed not to. In a fascinating twist, Charter put out a statement promising not to charge extra to customers or to limit their access. They just want the right to do so, like everyone else. It's like if you told your neighbor, "I just want the right to move my fence 10 feet onto your property. Give me that right. I won't do it, but I just want the right." Well, there's a deadline tomorrow for comments to the FCC about this. The New York Times says there must be a firm no to Charter's request, along with a more coordinated effort to make sure students can have online access no matter their household income or where they live. We don't know yet what New York State school districts are going to do. Every district is working on a plan. My son's district's probably going to have a plan out on Friday. Who knows what it's going to say? It's hard. I respect the superintendents, the teams, the teachers that are trying to figure this out. But there are millions of students who might not have access to basic learning. Let's talk about all of this. Our guests include Phil Dampier, founder of Stop the Cap, who's on the line with us now. Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also, Rachel Barnhart is a Monroe County legislator who's worked on connectivity and access issues. Rachel, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks so much for doing this.
So this is complex, and there's a lot of threads here. But the most immediate is this FCC deadline tomorrow. And Phil, I would like to, just to start with you. And why don't you lay out? I mean, I kind of gave the listeners a taste of what's going on with Charter, but what's going on here?
So back in 2016, Charter Communications, which was a smaller cable company out in St. Louis, decided to merge with much larger cable companies, Time Warner Cable and Bright House Networks, which mostly serves in some southern states. Now, Stop the Cap's been around since 2008, so this is not a new issue. We started back in 2008 when Frontier tried to apply a 5-gigabyte cap on their DSL customers, and Time Warner Cable is not new to this issue either. Yes, and that was 5 gigabytes. It's no mistake. And Time Warner Cable in 2009, just a year later, tried to do this with a 60-gigabyte cap. We organized a lot of protests and pushback on this issue, and we were successful in both times. But we realized that this is an issue that is going to go on and on and on because of the lack of competition in this marketplace. So back in 2016, we opposed and we filed testimony with both New York State and the Federal Communications Commission opposing the merger of Charter and Time Warner Cable, because big is not good when it comes to cable companies in this country. So one of the conditions that the FCC in 2016 said that would make this merger in the public interest, because they found it wasn't without imposing conditions, was to say that you cannot place a data cap on your customers for at least 7 years. And we're now coming up on the fifth year anniversary of this merger, and Charter is going in. A deal's a deal, except when it applies to a cable company, and they're asking the FCC to ditch that condition so they can have the right to apply data caps. And they are paying their lawyers five figures in order to put this message together. Now, I always would like to spend five figures on a lawyer to ask them to do something that I then tell the public I have no interest in actually doing. So, you know, if you want to believe the cable company on this issue, then I got a bridge to sell you.
That's kind of why I made the analogy with the neighbor and the fence at the outset here. You know, give me the in writing the right to move my fence 10 more feet onto your property, but I promise I won't do it. I just want the right. And I'm going to spend a lot of money on a lawyer to get that right, but then I won't exercise it. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense unless, Phil, I try to be generous and understand all of the arguments. I've read what Charter has to say on this. Am I missing something here, Phil?
Well, yeah, if you look in the response back when this whole merger deal was approved by the FCC, the FCC published in the merger approval document a Charter's executive's own positions where they outline in paragraph after paragraph why data caps are a horrible idea, that they're terrible, customers hate them, that it will hurt their business, that they'll become... customers will leave their cable service if they impose data caps, and they think they're just bad for business. Yet here they are, as a de facto monopoly for a lot of people in this country, where Charter's only competition is a beleaguered telephone company that only offers slow-speed DSL, and two of them in this area, Frontier and Windstream, they're both bankrupt right now. When you have a de facto monopoly and green light in this particular area doesn't serve your neighborhood, nor do they just serve my house, hello, green light, they can do whatever they want.
Why would lawmakers not simply say, sorry, guys, you got a couple more years on this agreement. You can't just speed up the rules here, and you're not getting a special break on being able to impose a data cap.
Well, back in 2016, when this whole issue was being debated, two of the Republican commissioners back during the Obama administration, when the Republicans were in the minority on the commission, had expressed a lot of skepticism about any deal conditions whatsoever, that it was, you know, not ethical to impose conditions on a business to that, you know, either you approve the merger, yes, or you don't approve it, no. But you don't put a lot of onerous deal conditions like a ban on data caps and such. Now under the Trump administration, the FCC, the Republicans have a majority on that commission, and two of the people that actually made those kinds of statements have a very strong position on the commission, including Ajit Pai, who is the current FCC chairman. So Charter's in good standing to appeal to this FCC to try and get permission to ditch those conditions because I suspect a majority of the Republicans on the commission didn't like them in the first place.
But Phil, then play this out for me. Let's say they get their way here and this pandemic goes well into 2021, who knows, maybe beyond, and we see a hodgepodge of school learning, for example, students in large numbers relying on online learning. I mean, that's just one thread of this, but it's a vital one, no doubt about it. That's why the New York Times editorial board focused on it, and I understand that. And that's why so many districts locally here are struggling with what to do, because they know that this is incredibly unequal. What's the worst-case scenario as you see it from your perspective, Phil?
Well, let me tell you from the perspective of my cousin, who's going to start medical school on Long Island in about 2 weeks. He will be on campus one day a week for lab work that they're doing, and the other 4 days a week, he'll be staying in his apartment watching hour after hour of videos that is basically going to represent the bulk of his education. I sat with him last night watching orientation videos, just the beginning of this, just to explain here's the door you go in and here's the classroom you're going to be in and all that. And just in one evening, he was consuming gigabytes of usage just watching orientation videos. So it's very clear that if you're going to be doing a lot of telelearning in your home, on top of your parents perhaps staying home and doing work from home as well on video conferencing, you're going to blow through your data cap. And that data cap, for most companies, it's been very arbitrary, has been a terabyte a month. And now that sounds like a lot, except the cable industry's own documents and own research shows 10% of users are already exceeding that data cap right now. And they already recognize that usage is exploding, and a lot more people are going to exceed that data cap in the near future. Charter's CEO himself recognized that among Charter's broadband-only customers, those are people that don't take a video package, are already using an average of almost 600 gigabytes a month. Just watching video, that's a lot of the content, or a lot of the usage is, comes from online video, but it's not one user in a house that usually puts somebody over a data cap. It's the combined usage of everyone in the house that does. And the fees for doing that, we call them over-limit fees because they start at $10 for each 50-gigabyte allotment of usage. And I know a lot of people don't understand, well, what's a gigabyte? How much does that represent in usage? Suffice to say, those that exceed their data caps have gotten bill shock, where they have gotten $50 in over-limit fees on a bill because they exceeded this arbitrary data cap. And when they open the bill, they're already paying an astronomical $65 a month for basic internet access. Now add $50 to that, $60, whatever the number may be. Some cable companies will have a limit of up to $200 in over-limit fees a month. I mean, it's just insane considering how inexpensive it is to provide this service to the public. But they're flexing a monopoly muscle. And we have a government that has done too little to foster the kind of competition we need to drive those prices down.
Well, and before I turn to Legislator Barnhart, let me just ask you then, Phil, for those who might argue that, look, this is a company that is, yeah, they signed, you know, the agreement was made in 2016 that they couldn't impose data caps until for at least 7 years. But it's not fair. Everybody else can. They just want to play by the rules that everybody else is doing, and that companies ought to be able to impose these rules. And if you don't like it, you ought to be able to go to a different company. You know, this sounds like basic capitalism.
Yes, but except for the fact that all these other companies did not go to the FCC asking for approval of a multi-billion-dollar merger that further limits competition in an already dreadful marketplace for competition, where there are almost no places in this country where you can choose from a different cable company. And again, as I mentioned earlier, if you're here in Rochester, what is your alternative if Greenlight doesn't happen to come by your house? Here in Rochester, in my house, here in Brighton, I'm a mile away from the city line. The best Frontier can do for me is 3 megabits DSL, which is not even broadband by the FCC's own definition. And Frontier is bankrupt right now, so I'm not sure we're going to see much from them in the near future. So the question then comes down to, is broadband an essential utility service? And we argue it is, and we have ever since we started our group. And our view is, if you look at all of the other essential utility services, what other utility receives absolutely no oversight from the help of a deregulatory FCC and a deregulatory Congress that gives these companies carte blanche to do what they want, whether they serve you or not, what prices they charge. And without that competition, there's nothing to protect consumers. And I think if you ask anyone what they feel about the local cable company, you're going to find a lot of people aren't too happy with them about their prices, service. You know, just dealing with them on the phone can be a nightmare.
Well, and one more for you then, Phil, on that subject of monopoly, because this, I think, is vital. Economic concentration robs and destroys competition. And this is not a partisan thing to say. This is just an observation of fact. The federal government has been pro-monopoly for decades now. Even Democrats, starting in the mid-1970s, it's pretty well documented, got much more friendly to the notion of economic concentration, you know, paving the way for mergers. And so I think what you're saying here, Phil, is when that happens, when it becomes most of government, Republicans, Democrats, people in power, are pro-merger, you limit competition. Competition's supposed to be at the heart of capitalism, and it's supposed to be at the heart of a free marketplace, and there's supposed to be benefits for the populace. But when you pave the way for merger after merger, and you limit competition and you increase economic concentration, what you do is you give a lot of power to those companies to impose whatever they want. If you want internet and there's only one option, you're going to have to pay whatever it is there. And this is a company that got a green light, oh boy, to borrow a phrase, the thumbs up back in 2016 for a merger, but they had to play by certain rules for 7 years. And now they want to say, well, thanks for giving us more economic concentration and less competition, but now we want to scrape those rules right off and do whatever we want. I mean, it does sound to me like it's a problem of monopoly policy, Phil.
Yes, and if you look in New York State, for example, I have to give some credit to New York State's Public Service Commission because they, too, had to sign off on this merger. And we are a national group. Stop the Cap doesn't just fight these issues here in Rochester. We fight them all over the country, and we monitor this situation. You know, it's been well over a decade now. And out of every regulatory oversight agency in the country, none has been more protective of consumers than the New York State Public Service Commission, who is very receptive when we approach them on this merger to impose their own deal conditions on the merger. And those were accepted, and they actually made a difference. I'll just quickly go over a couple of those. They had to extend broadband to a huge number of rural New York State residents that don't have broadband from any other company. They had to maintain a $14.99 affordable internet option for several years so that those who cannot afford $65 a month, and I'm sure Rachel will talk about that because there are a lot of her constituents that are struggling in the local economy here to pay those kind of bills, could at least stay connected to do things like basic homework assignments and look for a job and those kinds of issues. And on top of that, the local PSC or the state PSC has been on Spectrum from the get-go. In fact, you may remember a few years ago, they found that they were not in compliance. Spectrum was playing games and not actually meeting their commitments, and they threatened to kick them out of the state. And they had to find a new settlement to get Spectrum to own up to its own. They agreed to these conditions. Where are they? Why are they not performing? I know this all sounds very bleak to people, and you know they hear this and they think, well, I can't do anything about this. But let me give you just a story here about how it can go the other way. Back in 2009, we were battling Time Warner Cable when they tried to do the same issue. Back then, Rachel Barhart was a TV reporter, and she can attest to this. We fought back here in Rochester by showing up in front of that cable company and protesting. We picketed them. We got in touch with local government officials. We delivered a concerted message to the management of Time Warner Cable that said, we do not want these data caps. They're unnecessary. It's just a way of raising prices. It's a ripoff. And we raised such a ruckus that Senator Schumer came to town in April, like 2 weeks later after they first proposed this idea. And we ended up on the front lawn of Time Warner Cable with Senator Schumer. And there was so much pressure brought to bear that the CEO of Time Warner Cable said, I don't want these headaches. We're shelving this. We're not going to do it. And for the rest of Time Warner Cable's history as an independent company before this merger, they never went near that issue again. Because consumers showing up and fighting back can make a difference, and it does, because they don't want people in front of their company protesting them. They don't want the headache. They don't want to worry about what the next administration could do if customers are really upset with them on this issue. So people have to get involved. If we don't win the battle with the FCC, we're at least sending a message to Charter's management that says, hey, we're still here. We don't want data caps. We're prepared to fight. So don't even think about it.
And by the way, Phil, where do you want people to go to send that message? The deadline for the FCC feedback is tomorrow, as I understand it.
Yes, and if you go to Rachel's site or you go to stopthecap.com, you will find right on the homepage, I have step-by-step instructions. The FCC's method of commenting on these issues, it's almost designed like they don't really want to hear from people because it's somewhat arcane. But we've given you step-by-step instructions on what kinds of things you can write and how to do that. You'll just fill out a web-based form, use a little comment box, just make it clear in your message that you do not want to see the FCC relaxing deal conditions for a multi-billion dollar cable monopoly that they can afford to honor their seven-year deal. It's the least that they can do for their customers.
Rachel Barnhart, how do you see this move, potential move now, and do you think it's relevant to put it in context of the pandemic and who's most impacted?
Well, I think Phil is really excellent on this issue, and he does a wonderful job explaining as a consumer watchdog why this is so important and the technicalities of what is going on here. I joined with Phil to make sure that people understood that this was going on and that they had the right to submit comments. You know, we've got a lot going on in the world right now, and I'm afraid that this just isn't getting the attention that it would have gotten, say, in 2009 when I covered Phil's protests. So I'm really appreciative that you're doing this program right now. The idea that Charter would ask for permission to impose data caps while we're in the middle of a pandemic in which broadband internet is a lifeline to both school and work, and it could remain this way for some time. It's just outrageous. And let's be clear about what this means for people. We pay, I think if you get broadband only, it's about $65 a month for the Spectrum internet service. These data caps can add up to $100 a month if you're looking at Comcast's plan. That's an extra $100 a month if you for each amount of data that you go over. You know, you could get sacked with really big bills. And during the pandemic, Comcast had to raise their data cap because people were using so much bandwidth. And if you want unlimited data from Comcast, you pay an extra $30 a month. You know, I kind of relate it to your cell phone plan. If you have a cell phone plan, maybe you pay for unlimited data. Maybe you use your phone as a hotspot. But if you don't do that, you could go over those limits. And I know I used to get sacked with the $10 extra if you use an extra gigabit. So we don't want that to happen to our consumers here. We pay enough for internet. And not only do we pay enough for internet, let's look at the numbers here about people who don't have access to broadband. In rural areas in the United States, it's an issue of access because you have places where you just don't have the fiber. The lines have not been run. In urban areas, the problem is adoption. You've got a lot of people who simply do not have internet subscriptions. Maybe they don't have the equipment. But in the city of Rochester, fully 31% of households do not have internet, no connection at all, not even a cell phone broadband connection. That's 27,000 households. You've got another big portion that about, I think that I just saw an article, the latest number is 17% of city school kids who only have access to cell phone internet. That is slow. It may not, the phones may not be able to be used as hotspots, and they can be subjected to data caps. Now, we know that there's been a wonderful program where MiFi devices have been distributed to students. That's not fast internet. And we have to remember that this kind of philanthropy is a stopgap measure. It is not a permanent solution. So this issue of the data caps is certainly part of a much larger issue when we talk about digital inequality in our community and talk about the consequences going forward if the FCC allows this.
Rachel, is there anywhere else, maybe in North America? Canada has talked about it. Prime Minister Trudeau's talked about making sure there is Wi-Fi access for all Canadian students for online and remote learning. Are there plans happening elsewhere that you say that's how it should be done?
Oh, sure. There are communities across the United States that have done everything along the spectrum of full municipal internet, meaning they build the network, they run the network, they sell it out to consumers, to public-private partnerships, which can take many different forms. For example, you could have government lease out their fiber lines to a company that promises to keep costs low for consumers. You could have government own a network and have a private company run that network for the government. But the goal of these municipal networks is all the same. It's to make sure that we that we efficiently and effectively provide internet to the most number of people possible. The city of Rochester, it's obviously a larger problem than it is in the suburbs, but there's nothing saying that this isn't something that could be done countywide. So these models take on a lot of different looks. I am a big proponent of establishing some kind of task force for the county to get a bunch of experts and stakeholders at the table and figure out what are our assets, what are the resources. And there is a big opportunity coming up. I'm part of a very informal working group with some county officials, the community foundations, and city officials. We're very small and informal, but it's very clear that the federal government is going to be offering infrastructure funding. It can be used for broadband, and so we are really poised to submit an application. Well, what do we want? What do we want that network to be? Do we want it to be Wi-Fi, blanketing certain neighborhoods, or do we want to go full on fiber to the home? There are a lot of different options. We really need to study what is best for our community.
And for your perspective on this, you know, you're a Democratic legislator, but you have been very willing in your career to be vocal when you think any party, any political party, is making a mistake here. Do you view this in any partisan sense, or is this an issue with this concentrated economic power, the mergers, data caps, internet access? Is this partisan at all?
Well, it should not be a partisan issue, but here's the reality. And you kind of touched on it with Phil when you asked him about, you know, hey, why aren't lawmakers doing something about this? Well, this is going to sound really terrible, but you know, our government sort of bought and paid for by these big telecom companies. I went and looked up between January 2013 and September 2019, I looked up campaign contributions by Big Telecom, Cablevision, Charter, Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, FiberTech, which is now known as Crown Castle, Sprint, T-Mobile. And I looked up how much they'd given local politicians here in Rochester as well as the governor. And the amount during that six-year period was more than $800,000, the bulk of it going to Governor Cuomo, about $600,000. But, you know, the Monroe County Democratic Committee took in $45,000. The Republican Committee took in $32,000. Just about every prominent politician took something from these companies. And you know, we've had stories about these companies writing legislation, writing press releases. This is the way things go. They're very, very, very powerful. We have the resources in this country to solve this problem. We electrified the United States. We have water to all of our buildings and houses. We know how to do this, okay? We just don't want to. We need the political will there. It's really terrible that the pandemic is forcing, that this crisis that we're in is forcing the discussion. I'm hopeful that we see some movement and some change, and it sounds like we are. You know, I'm thrilled that Adam Bello is willing to have this conversation and is very supportive at looking at solutions. I don't know what those solutions will be. People get a little queasy when you talk about a municipal broadband network, you know, but you know, we pay for our roads. Our tax dollars pay for our roads to get us from point A to point B. Well, it's time that we pay for the information superhighway. That when you look at the cost versus the benefit analysis, I think you're looking at a huge win for our community that could, you know, not only fix the digital divide problem, but then you could get into economic development. You could get into businesses that want to flock here because they have high-speed, low-cost internet. But we need fiber in this community. We need better options. Right now, Charter isn't providing that. And I just want to say one thing about Greenlight. Greenlight has reached out to our little working group. You know, they want to be part of the discussion. I'm thrilled to hear that. Greenlight has a demand-based model, though. You know, they're not probably coming to my neighborhood of Beechwood without government help. And we need to have that conversation. Greenlight is not, they wait until they have enough subscribers to pay the capital expenses. They're a business. That's their right. Not suggesting that they're wrong. What I am suggesting, though, is that it's probably going to take a lot of different people, public entities as well as private entities coming together to figure this out.
Yeah, I think when people hear green light, they think, well, that'll solve it. That'll be everywhere. But if there are neighborhoods where there is more poverty, you're probably not seeing green light right now. And as Legislator Barnhart
just said.
The map
shows that.
Yeah.
The map actually shows that.
Right.
I got in trouble for calling it digital redlining. People didn't like that term, but I mean, the map looks exactly like the old redlining maps. Of the city of Rochester.
Well, as Legislator Barnhart said, that is the company's right, but that is not going to solve this issue for kids who are growing up in poverty and with questions about what they are going to do this fall. Go ahead, Phil. I know you want to jump in.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I agree that it's really not a partisan issue, and it isn't particularly in rural areas where you have Republican elected officials that are dealing with access problems from intransigent companies. Rachel was so right when she explained that a lot of legislators are being paid big money by cable companies and phone companies. Some are members of this American Legislative Exchange Council group that literally allows lobbyists to write legislation. And in many states in this country, they have specifically written laws to keep public broadband out of their state. No municipal broadband, because they consider it unfair competition from private companies that won't even provide service to these areas. And, you have cities like Chattanooga. It's the model city for public broadband. They have a sort of a co-op municipal power company there that supplies fiber internet to everyone in the city limits that wants the service. And the economic boost that they receive from manufacturers and high-tech businesses that relocated from places like Nashville and Knoxville that moved their business to Chattanooga just to take advantage of gigabit fiber internet about 10 years ago was astonishing. And that network is going to be successful, and it has been paid for. And you see a lot of detractors that say, I don't want my public tax dollars being spent on some, taxpayer-funded broadband network, but they don't realize that your tax dollars are already going to private cable and phone companies right now to subsidize those companies to wire up areas that they heretofore have refused to wire. And so it's already a sort of corporate welfare system. It's just a question of what are we reinforcing here? Are we reinforcing a $65 cable bill? Or in a competitive market or an area where you have some municipal providers where that internet bill is $25 a month and it's unlimited? That's the one thing you'll see with most of these municipal providers and other new entrants like Greenlight. They don't talk about data caps because the cost of providing the content, Time Warner Cable executives, the internal documents that were uncovered by the New York State Attorney General back when they were suing Time Warner Cable, they found documents where company executives called the cost of transporting data from customers to services like Netflix and Hulu and all these other services, they called them, quote, a rounding error in the scheme of things. So this isn't really about how much it costs to transport data. It's not about that. It's just another way of flexing, as you said, that market power. I listen to Wall Street conferences all the time, and they use these terms that are opaque to consumers, but we've kind of learned them as we've gone. They say that cable broadband prices, for example, have a long runway. Well, what does that mean? It means there's a long way to go where they can continue to raise prices. And we have one Wall Street analyst that is constantly asking, when are you going to put the data caps on? When are broadband bills in this country going to reach $100 a month? Because that is what they want. Because that's how you get the returns that are disappearing from services like cable TV, where people are cutting the cord and they're turning their backs on, hundreds of channels they don't watch. The Yarn channel, the Filing Cabinet Network. Who watches that stuff? But you're paying for it.
I love the Filing Cabinet Network, but I'm like one of the only ones. To Phil's point here, the argument is we are headed for a future with $100 a month for these kind of bills and very profitable companies, but a lot of people who can't afford it, or we're headed for a lot more competition, a lot less monopoly, and maybe $20 to $30 a month with probably unlimited and no cap. Those are the kind of fork in the road we look at when we think about monopoly and economic concentration. And before I turn it over to listeners, which I'm going to do in just a moment because we've got questions, we've got phone calls and emails on this subject, a couple more quick points here. Legislator Barnhart, you talk about the influence of money. You looked up all the contributions that these communications companies have made to everyone from Governor Cuomo to members of Congress and everything in between, local, you know, political committees and everything. But I've been reliably told by Republicans and Democrats that when they do that, it's because they already know that the recipient agrees with them and they just want to support that. They're not actually trying to buy any influence. That doesn't happen. Republicans and Democrats tell me they could never be influenced by those kind of contributions.
Well, I always say when it comes to campaign finance that you can never prove a quid pro quo. And all politicians say, I'm not influenced by the people
yes,
who give me money. But the record, but we are smart people. The we can trust the public to look at the record. That's why our campaign finances are public. And look at who's giving who money and what are the decisions that they make. And where do they decide to place their votes? Where do they place public investments? And so, you know, I think if the record is there for the public to decide what's really going on.
And you know, actually, you know what they actually usually say? Politicians usually say, yes, we need campaign finance reform. Yes, money is too influential in politics. No, it doesn't influence me. It just influences
That's
everybody
right.
else.
And I also, before you turn it over to listeners, I just want to, it's not a little thing that I wanted to point out, but I'll be brief. The Monroe County taxpayers have paid for a very extensive underground fiber network. As starting in the 90s, as we were doing road and sewer projects, we laid down fiber. It was a really smart thing that happened. The problem is this is not a unified network. And Monroe County studied this back in 2017 and promptly placed a study that we paid for on the shelf and didn't do anything with it. But this study essentially found that there are 250 governmental sites, including town and village buildings, that were within 1,500 feet of the county's fiber and not connected. And so they were paying for their own fiber. So everyone's got their own fiber. But if we did if we took this network and upgraded it to what's called carrier class, meaning other people can jump on, whether it's governments or whatever, that we could save some money, we could get some revenue, and who knows, maybe that network could one day be used for other purposes, such as bridging the digital divide. So that is the type of thing that I'm hoping that we're able to study going forward.
You're hearing Monroe County Legislator Rachel Barnhart and Phil Dampier, the founder of Stop the Cap. They're our guests as we talk about a deadline tomorrow for comments to the FCC about what Charter Communications is asking federal regulators to do. Charter wants permission to impose new data caps on broadband users in the middle of a pandemic, at a time when we know that a lot of students are going to still be doing a lot of remote learning. And we know there's massive inequality when it comes to access and affordability already. Charter wants permission for data caps and to charge more. Now, they say they just want permission for it. They won't actually do it. And the FCC has got to decide. Well, we're talking about impacts there and accessibility. And after our only break of the hour, we've got your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, what have doctors learned about how to treat COVID-19 over the course of the pandemic? Doctors at the University of Rochester Medical Center say inpatient care evolved from basically flying blind in March to using specific treatments, starting clinical trials, and more. We're joined by clinicians and researchers who share what they've learned and what being on the front lines of the virus looks like today, Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll start with Bonnie on the phone. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. let me just start with saying that, just a minute, that it is very frustrating because, you know, it takes a pandemic for us to focus on these things. A lot of these things are not like, oh, they just started yesterday. I mean, if I hear one more person talking about these things, not necessarily your group here, saying, oh, I didn't know that all these people didn't have, what planet do you live on? So it becomes very frustrating. So what the people with the Green Party did, we asked Rachel to come to one of our meetings, which we have monthly, and she was good enough to do it, and she went through a lot of stuff she just talked about, including, you know, options, because people have to know this, and this. So from that, we, of course, are already we were focused somewhat on municipal broadband, because we want something that's public, that's, you know, doesn't break the bank, too. But we know it's not easy. But one of the things I think came out of that whole thing, and one of the reasons we went ahead to have her come, is because we forget sometimes that there are more and more groups in the Rochester area neighborhoods that have, in the last 4 or 5 years, have really worked harder to really have a say. Now that with the pandemic and everything, of course, you know, some of that begins to be difficult, but it'll come back. So I would like to see a plan, and Rachel, maybe I'm gearing this toward your group that's me. We need to be part of that. We need to have to go to neighborhoods first, have a certain schedule. Okay, let's hit this one, this one, this one. Some of them come together, talk about the main points, talk about the importance. And then I think you'll have a lot of support from that, because I think everybody, you know, is once they know and they want to support. And then have the more bigger discussion about what options. Because you need that people part. You need people who can say, no, that isn't what we want. This is what we want, and are going to be outspoken. And they're the core of how to do that.
All right, Bonnie.
Yeah,
thank you.
Bonnie is.
Yeah,
Rachel, I just want to respond to that. I strongly believe you've got stakeholders at the table when you're talking about possible solutions. And by stakeholders, I definitely mean the people whom this would impact, because some cities that have tried municipal internet have found that people really weren't bought in when they did it. And they said, why are you paying for my internet when I can't afford rent? So you really need to talk to people about what their needs are and what would solve their problem. So we've got to have everyone at the table in order to make sure that we're not just doing something to people, that it's something that would genuinely help and is needed.
You agree with that, Phil?
Yeah, in fact, our group is all consumers. We're just ordinary people. No one's paid. We would not have made the impact that we did back in 2009 if people didn't show up with signs and things and protested in front of that company. It makes all the difference, because it attracts the coverage that we need to drive these issues home.
Let me read some emails. Kathy says, I have heard that some cities have tried to set up their own cable facilities and that it is illegal. Could you ask one of your guests to explain whether that's true, and if so, why? That's from Kathy. Rachel Barnhart?
There, in some places in the country, municipal networks are illegal. I don't believe New York is one of those places, although Phil could talk a little bit more about that. I don't believe New York is one of those places. I have heard some debate among local elected officials about what's legal and what's not, but that's why we have to get people together, including legal experts, to figure out what is possible here. What I do know is that that government does own and lease a significant amount of fiber, and what we do with that fiber, we're paying for it, so we should be able to make those decisions.
Bill? So what happens is that in some states, this is on the state government level, legislators have been grouped together by lobbying groups like ALEC, the Koch brothers, other groups sort of like that, and they're persuaded to accept these pre-written bills that we later find out are actually written by cable lobbyists that make it difficult, if not impossible, for any municipal broadband network to begin operations. They just put all these onerous conditions on them that just make it impossible to get off the ground, or they just blanket outlaw them. And that prevents these kinds of projects from getting off the ground. And in New York State, that is not the case. However, there have been, as Rachel said, there have been some efforts, but in this state, we seem to be a little bit more progressive thinking about these things. And none of those things have ever gotten any real foothold in our state.
Well, let me also read an email from Merrick, who says, even reasonable quality internet service is a monopoly in much of the Rochester metro area and the U.S. in general. The, quote, last mile is non-competitive. I am forced to pay Spectrum since Verizon and other providers refuse to install fiber or DSL. Without regulatory control, this is just a monopoly. No one will invest to provide alternative service. This was the rationale for the Rural Electrification Act and the original telephone monopoly. Rachel, you want to start? Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. I mean, let's talk about that last mile problem. That's the expensive problem. So you've got these big fiber pipes, these main thoroughfares, so to speak. Think of it like a road. And then you've got to somehow connect it to all the side streets. That's where the big bucks come in. That's why Greenlight needs to get a certain number of subscriptions before they're going to build in your neighborhood. But there have been estimates about what the last mile would cost to, say, every household in the city of Rochester. A few years ago, that cost was estimated to be between $50 and $80 million. Now, that sounds like, whoa, that's a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but think about how much we spend on, for I think, Route 390. We've paid $100 million to reconfigure all of that. I mean, if you put it into context of the other things that we spent money on, we're spending $30 million to build three new police stations. If you think of it in terms of infrastructure and long-term investment, then the dollars start to not look quite as scary. I'm sure Phil has something to say about that.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Right. On this issue, it is the big money is always on last mile. And Rochester and Monroe County does have these institutional fiber networks that are already in place. It's just that a lot of times, again, thanks to lobbyists, the funding for these things often carried these conditions that said that only institutions could access them. A lot of that has kind of gone away, but where do you find the investment to take that connection that may be running down Monroe Avenue or 590 and hooking it up to individual homes? It's a problem in places like Western Massachusetts and areas like that. Municipal broadband networks are successful when you see these big dollar items, because you have to think about it as it is a long-term investment with a 20-year payback. Remember, cable companies and other companies are putting in networks that have been long since paid off, but it took them 20 years too. But they're now worth billions and billions of dollars. Now, would you rather have the money, if we had a municipal public broadband option in this area, would you rather have the profits stay in town and go into your local community, or would you rather have it go to some investors on Wall Street who just want more and more and more and want to charge you more and more and more? It is a public utility issue. How much do we want to pay, and where do we want that money to go?
Listeners, if you've got still room on your summer reading list, I want to mention a couple of books that will explain a little bit about how we got here. The first book is called Goliath, The 100-Year War Between Monopoly, Power, and Democracy by Matthew Stoller, who's been a guest on this program. And there's a new book that comes out next weekend called Monopolized, Life in the Age of Corporate Power by David Dayan. And David Dayan has probably done the most extensive work looking at the foreclosure scams and crisis in this country, among other related issues, the weaponization of economic power. So that's a book that is on my list to come, and I would love to have David Dayan on this program. But that's what has led us to this corporate climate where there isn't a whole lot of competition. I mean,
I got another book.
What is it?
Zephyr Teachout,
yes.
Break 'em Up.
Break 'em, yeah, of course. Zephyr Teachout, former gubernatorial candidate, among others, and a guest on this program who teaches. And so her book is called Break 'em Up.
Break 'em Up.
All right. So,
yep.
So those are.
And one other thing. Just one other point on this. I want everyone to think about, remember 40, 50 years ago, maybe even a little longer than that, you know, when we actually started to really expand out our electric companies in this area, as people started to spread out into the hinterlands around Monroe County, into the other counties and things, and we got rural electrification. And even in this area, we have the electrification. Think about the history of an investor-owned utility like RG&E and the rates and services you're paying for them, and then think about municipal electric companies like Fairport Electric. How many people would rather be paying Fairport Electric a fraction of the prices that RG&E, an investor-owned utility, charges for the same service? We're kind of at this starting point. It's the same thing all over again. These issues are so similar to the electrification question. Imagine if you had that choice right now. Would you rather pay Spectrum or RG&E, or would you rather pay, say, you know, Rochester Public Internet or Fairport Electric?
Well, and as we get ready to close here, I think this is an important point for me to remind anyone who's listening, thinking, well, this sounds like just advocacy and, sort of politicking about monopoly. I'm simply pointing out facts that we do not really have a competitive free market economic system. We have a system that sort of loads it up for a few powerful companies that are able to sort of progressively gobble up competition, and this is the result. Maybe that's fine with you, but it is the result of policy. It is the result of policy choices, and it's not the result of policy choices by any one party. The two major parties, Republicans and Democrats, for the last 40 to 50 years have engaged in this policy. And so this is some of the result that we're seeing. And so I think it is probably fair to ask, Legislator Barnhart, do you view moves towards, whether it's as Teachout says, break them up, or an idea of, you know, sort of pushing back against monopoly, is that pro-business in the end?
So I think that if we go to a municipal model, I think that's not, I don't think that's pro-business.
So that's why I ask, because I think libertarians would prefer a pro-business, but not loading up a monopoly, whereas others might say, no, let's go to a municipal model, because at least that changes sort of the structure of who's paying what and who has access.
Listen, the private marketplace has shown it's not going to solve this problem, okay? So it's for me, this isn't about hurting a company as much as it is about solving a problem. And if they have shown, if they showed any willingness to really to work with us and solve this, they just haven't. You know, and I could go into a bunch of different stories about them being approached to try to solve it, and they're not willing to do it. So we're going to need either a pure municipal network or a public-private partnership, but government's going to have to be at the table, in my opinion, to figure this out.
What do you think, Phil?
I think that you forget that it isn't just about charter. It's about the entire digital internet economy that goes along with it. Imagine if you're Netflix. Imagine if you're Hulu. Imagine all these internet businesses and digital businesses that have been started, Amazon.com. I mean, they're contributing to our economy as well, and they're dealing with the same bottlenecks, the same kind of, you know, greed and confiscatory pricing that the cable companies are charging consumers. They're also trying to charge these providers in order to allow their traffic across their networks. And that's another issue for another day. But it's not just about what's best for the cable company. It's supposed to be about what's best for us.
If you want to make comments before the deadline for the FCC tomorrow, Phil Dampier, one more time, where do you want people to go?
So you can find a complete roundup of this issue and instructions on how to submit your comments to the FCC on stopthecap.com.
Phil Dampier is the founder of Stop the Cap. Thanks for making time for the program today, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Rachel Barnhart, a Monroe County legislator. Please keep us abreast of this, because I know that, as you mentioned earlier, you're working with a number of folks at the county level, the Community Foundation, and beyond. Let's stay in touch and let's continue to have these conversations. We know it's a complex problem with students either going back partially or not at all in the buildings. We're going to find out more soon. But thank you, and let's stay in touch, Rachel.
Thanks so much for highlighting this today.
You got it. Rachel Barnhart, Monroe County legislator. Thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer of Connections, and Megan Mack as the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.